Final hour for the week. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app. Now on TSN 2. Brian Haynes, Dave Festruck from the Toronto Star.
Final hour before you go on vacation. Am I right?
I'm out of here for 2 weeks.
Good for you.
Yeah, I think I'm excited.
You don't look it.
No, we don't have a lot planned.
Okay.
Like, we're gonna get out in about a couple of times, I think, and that's the hope, but I don't know. Sometimes I get bored. Like, by the second week, I get bored. And I just hope I don't miss anything. Like, big news.
You've got a history of doing that. When you get time off, big things break.
And generally, like, in Toronto, big things break.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that would necessarily be. I guess I'm going to be out of here during the trade deadline of Major League Baseball. But, like, Donaldson's not getting traded or anything like that.
Can't see it.
Although Bautista waiving his 10-5 rights and getting dealt would be a significant move.
Yeah.
It would have historical ramifications.
But they could probably do that after the non-waiver deadline on Monday, because you would think he would clear waivers given the heft of his contract.
So. Absolutely. Everyone in the league clears waivers.
Yeah.
Basically.
So this is a trade deadline that's not really a trade deadline.
I'm thinking more the NBA. I don't think the Raptors will be involved, but...
Ooh, I don't know.
Do you think Kyrie Irving will still be in Cleveland by the time I get back?
I'd have to bet yes, but I do know that the Cavaliers are trying to make it no fairly hard. Like, they've been working the phones.
Yeah, I read this morning that at least six teams have made offers.
And I think there's a chance the Raptors could be peripherally involved in a deal. A multi-team deal that involves Kyrie Irving changing teams, but not coming to Toronto, but would be a venue for the Raptors to maybe dump some garbage, to possibly pick up some pieces that could help them that would not be core pieces. There are possibilities there. I do know that phone calls have been made. I mean, it's every team in the league is scouting around the fringes of that deal. Even if they don't see themselves as the probable landing spot for Kyrie Irving, seeing a way that they could possibly get involved to benefit them, obviously, because it's a complicated deal any way you look at it with Kyrie Irving, and so multiple teams will likely have to be involved.
I feel like this is where the agents really make their money, too, when you've got a player who wants out, and you've got to do some heavy lifting to convince the team to let him out, to find that option out there. Like, I don't think the average fan, I don't want to sound like that guy, you don't know, but how often it really is agents that are manipulating what's happening behind the scenes and are orchestrating a lot of deals.
Yeah.
Like, that are actually like, okay, give me a week and I'll find you something. Because I'll talk to the GMs and I have a different relationship with them than you do. And I might know what's happening in other organizations where you don't know that there's another guy who's unhappy that wants out, but he hasn't gone public with it, but I'm his agent, so I can maybe work something out here.
Well, yeah, because if
that happens a lot more than people think.
And in this particular instance, here's why it would happen. Because if you're going to trade for Kyrie Irving, you want to know what Kyrie Irving thinks about the prospect of playing for your franchise, and how are you going to find that out? You're going to phone his agent. You're going to phone his agent and say, how's this working? You know, I'm Greg Popovich with the San Antonio Spurs. What would it be like if Kyrie Irving comes to the San Antonio Spurs? The agent's one of your first calls. I mean, probably Mike Krzyzewski, who coached Kyrie Irving very briefly at Duke, would be another call. But you're right. The agents in the NBA especially are incredibly powerful.
Very powerful.
And they're working a lot of the levers.
Well, and reports are coming out every day about Kyrie and where he wants to go. The truth is he hasn't spoken publicly about it. He's not going to. His agent's not going to tip his hand one way or the other. But it sounds as if he'd like to go to the Knicks, which I find rich because other reports are out there that the reason he wants to leave Cleveland is because it's been too tumultuous over the past few years. And he wants stability in his life. So why would you not want to go play for James Dolan and the New York Knicks?
Oh, my gosh.
If you're looking for stability, the Knicks just scream that at you, don't they?
Isn't that the truth?
I mean, I think it's all bogus. I think what's happened here is he's looking at it. He knows LeBron's out of here at the end of the year. I think so. And he's thinking, you're going to leave Cleveland as a wasteland for me, and I don't want to be a part of it. And I've been to three NBA finals already. Yeah, we could maybe get to a fourth, but we're going to get smoked by Golden State. So get me out before you leave. I think that's what's happening.
I like that theory, too, and I think there is merit to that theory. But the thing about it is, don't forget, he signed a long-term deal to be in Cleveland before LeBron came on board. So he was ready to play for a crappy Cavs team previously.
Didn't have as much leverage, though, like early in his career.
No, but he was, like, don't underestimate this guy's ego and don't underestimate this guy's love of the basketball.
He takes more shots than almost anyone
thing.
In the league.
He likes dribbling that thing. Yeah, when LeBron's got it, he can't.
Perfect segue into like big money, ego, controversy. What's going on in Boston right now with David Price? And he's been placed on the DL, or he's going to be placed on the DL, but there are conspiracy theories flying around New England that he's just got the Fenway flu. He doesn't want to pitch tonight because it would be the first time back at Fenway since the Eckersley story broke loose, and he'd be fearful that he'd just get booed off the mound.
And he'd be right.
He probably would be. Let's head down to Boston now, catch up with Red Sox columnist with the Boston Herald. Here is Michael Silverman. Do you buy into that conspiracy theory, Michael?
Well, look, I understand why people would think that. Awfully difficult to prove. I don't think the Red Sox would go to this extreme to do something like that. I can see why people would think that. Let me put it that way. But I don't think it really fits in David Price's MO here. He's been pitching through, obviously the heat hasn't become as intense as it just was when he was on the road, but he has been a target of fans' discontent for a while now and has basically pitched as if it didn't really matter. He's pretty good at compartmentalizing stuff, that's for sure, almost to a frightening degree. So I don't think that he was, that this is something concocted. The team is in first place. They need David Price too much. I can't imagine they would go to that extreme and put their win-loss record in jeopardy in order to prevent David Price, the ability to hear some boos. I think David Price could probably handle that better than we think.
For those of you not familiar, David Price has been in the news more off the field than on it recently because of a blow-up he had with Dennis Eckersley that he provoked. It was basically a one-way street. He's had blow-ups with media members down in New England really since he signed there. And it's been really hot and heavy over the past month and a half. And if he were to be pitching tonight, if he were on the mound, what were you expecting from a fan perspective and how they were going to respond to him?
Well, you never know how much the fans are filled with kind of sports radio listeners, newspaper readers, or just, some of the pink-hatted tourists that come to Fenway every day. I'm sure he would be hearing it, and that it would be pretty vocal and pretty loud, but I don't think it would be continuous, and that if he pitched really well, that they would give him a Bronx cheer if he struck out the side. I think he could win them over with his performance. I think Sox ultimately, the fans are influenced by what they read and hear, but if they see someone performing in front of them well, then I think they would cheer him. But if he were to stink the bed, then he would certainly hear it. That there's no doubt about that. Not many in Boston or even Toronto or New York, they're not very shy about expressing themselves honestly.
Hey, Michael, it's been an interesting season for that Red Sox team because obviously they're leading the AL East, and yet, they've had this David Price controversy, and they're not hitting home runs in a way that I'm sure people in Boston would like them to hit home runs, and that's that has caused some pining for a certain marquee named David Ortiz. And I'm wondering, there's been all this talk since David Ortiz retired, incessant talk, really, that he might one day come back. He might miss playing baseball, and he might be able to come back for a stretch drive, even at his advanced age. Is there any possibility in your mind that could indeed happen?
I give that chance about a 5-7% chance, which is not really high.
Saying there's a chance?
I guess there is a chance, but I'm not going to bet on it. I'm not holding my breath. I think it's extremely unlikely. And I think that David Ortiz is a very happy retired person who understands full well that the team could use him, but he's not about to go upend his newly found. Look, this guy's getting endorsements right and left. He's having a good time. He's back with his family. I just don't think he's going to do it. He was pretty firm about it last year. I think he had every opportunity to give it another shot, but I think he's happily retired. And Yeah, I mean, you know, look, the Red Sox were built on run prevention this year. They knew they couldn't replace David Ortiz, and that's why someone like David Price is so important, and Chris Sale, obviously. But, again, it gets back to David Price. The two Davids are critical to this team, and now they don't have either one.
Sox Royals tonight at Fenway. He is Michael Silverman, Sox columnist with the Boston Herald. Enjoy it. Enjoy the weekend. Thank you for doing this today, Michael. We appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime, guys. Thanks.
I would love for this to be the truth, that Price just said, get me on that DL, man. I can't go out there. I don't believe it, because I think athletes are not generally wired that way. He understands that if he did that and it got out, he really would be toast. There's no way you come back from that. You can't have it leaked that you bailed on a game against a good Royals team when your team's had some ups and downs, yet they're still atop the standings, and you're getting paid like $30 million a year because you're worried about some boos or a reaction from the fans. You just can't put yourself in that position. But, man, it would be one hell of a story.
Well, look, we don't as Michael Silverman rightly pointed out, it's very difficult to prove that this is the case. So we're just having some fun with it. I mean, the idea that it could be the case, it's not out of the realm of possibility, given what we know about David Price. This is a guy who has buckled under the spotlight of playoff baseball multiple times. We all know his troubles in the playoffs. And, of course, we saw them firsthand here in Toronto. And they saw him. And, you know, they've been writ large. We know that story. The other thing is, when you look back at his time here, I remember there was this, you know, everybody loved the guy, right? He loved the popcorn. People embraced him when he came to Toronto. But there was always this undercurrent of insiders who knew the guy better than we did, saying, keep an eye on him. He has a reputation as a touch of a phony, okay? And maybe there's something to that now, that this was Mr. Remember he had that saying in his locker, if you don't like it, pitch better? If you don't like it, pitch better. Same guy who's not liking the broadcast analysis of Dennis Eckersley.
And it wasn't even about him. It
wasn't even about him.
Like, it was about someone else. So for whatever reason, he took
it personally. Same philosophy as, hey, if you don't like what the analysts are saying about your game, play better. You know, you would think that if he was true to that mantra, that he seemed to sort of bill as his career-defining mantra.
Yeah, he always came off a bit disingenuous. Yeah. But we didn't need to know about it because Jays fans were so happy that the great David Price was here.
Yeah.
And listen, he pitched really well as a Blue Jay.
He did.
Pitched really, really well. So, you know, his time in Toronto was not tarnished at all. But he's got an option where he can opt out of this 7-year deal after next season. And I have to believe the Red Sox are praying that he does. I wouldn't be shocked if he did, if he's healthy. If his elbow is actually wonky and he blows it out and he needs Tommy John, he's not opting out of that deal.
No.
He's got to come back and perform and prove that he can continue to pitch and would be worthy of a new contract. So, I mean, there's a lot of balls up in the air in Boston and surrounding Price, and yet maybe we're forgetting they're a first-place team. But they don't feel like an overly dangerous team to me.
No, because they can't hit.
Exactly. Like, they don't hit for power. They manufacture runs. Yeah. They've done enough to win games. They got Chris Sale, who's probably the best pitcher in the American League right now, more than likely will win the Cy Young. Decent bullpen, pretty good bullpen, but they got some holes. Third base, a black hole. They don't hit with pop.
Yeah.
If Price is injured, you know, Porcello won a Cy Young, and now he's had a down year. It's kind of a weird first-place team, especially for a deep division.
And you worry, like, if you talk about, you know, Alex Anthopoulos at the end of his tenure here in Toronto, as much as he was an analytics guy, talked about the importance of chemistry, right? And how he was won over to the idea that if you're really going to have a winning team, you got to have good chemistry. Now you wonder, like, what's this Price stuff done to their chemistry? What's having an influential guy who's so thin-skinned in a market that crazy and frenetic, what's that do to a team? Like, the old Red Sox, the David Ortiz Red Sox, didn't get worried about what the commentators were saying about him on a regular basis, at least not that I remember. They let that stuff roll off their backs, and they won World Series.
Well, they certainly wouldn't provoke an issue that didn't have anything to do with them directly.
Yeah.
Like, there was a history between Ortiz and Dan Shaughnessy, who's a big columnist down there. And those two have had issues, but that was like steroid-related and PED-related, and quite frankly, I'm not sure Ortiz has a leg to stand on when it comes to that.
Yeah.
But still, there were some feuds there, but that's more direct. You know, like Price, again, by all accounts, has felt as if it's on him to speak up for the team and pick fights with the media on behalf of the team.
And this wasn't the first time.
No. I mean, down at Yankee Stadium in early June, he was picking off guys left, right, and center and speaking on behalf of the Sox, saying, you know, screw them all, blah, 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 blah.
Screw them all, and meaning the media.
We don't need them, and get them out of here. And it's exactly. Like, you're not going to win that battle,
like,
man.
And it's like, you know, we live that market here with the Leafs. Like, that's why it's important to embrace the market you're in. Like, you can't, like, David Price is, he can't stay there long-term acting like that. It's just not going to work.
No, it's not. But the money's there, the contract's there. So technically he can if he opts in. You know, and that's where it makes you wonder how the Red Sox will handle that next year. Let's say he comes back and he underperforms, and they're looking at it thinking he's going to opt in, man. He's going to pick up the next $120 million or whatever's on the contract. How can we make his life even more difficult where we make sure he leaves?
Imagine that scenario where they actually...
That's a conspiracy theory I buy into.
I buy into that one. Imagine the scenario where they actively encourage, or maybe, you know, behind the scenes encourage people to go at David
Price. His life as
make
difficult
his life
as possible.
Difficult. Don't step back. Don't say, hey, give him his space. Get in his face. I mean, I don't know if I'd
I'm not
buy
saying
that.
It's 100% going to happen, but it wouldn't shock me if the Red Sox looked at it and said, we might have to get creative to find a way for him to not opt in.
No, but they got
now
be
what
praying.
That means, I don't know, but
they've got to be praying that this guy gets healthy soon,
because they need him.
They need him, eh?
Like Sale and Price, even with his history in the playoffs, you're still going to put him out there over an unknown commodity.
But isn't this the classic case where if he did get healthy again and started pitching better, like, you trade him pronto the minute you could?
Well, that's an interesting point, the idea of throwing him on the table. But it makes you wonder what the rest of the league would think. Because, again, you're taking on a 7-year contract. Yeah, with options. But what if he picks them all up?
Well, that's the
problem. Do you want 5 more years of a guy who maybe can't cut it in the biggest markets? And if you're not talking about the biggest markets, who's going to take them?
Who's going to take that contract?
Right? Like, a small market team isn't going to take it because they're not going to pay $120 million.
That's a great point, you know. I mean, I think...
They might be stuck with him, which is saying something, because I think he's still a very good pitcher. He's got the stuff. He had a great second half last year. This year he's been injured almost from the hop. But...
Well, you know, it's like Scott Miller of the Bleacher Report, who we had on earlier in the show, talked about. Like, there's going to have to be some sort of come-to-Jesus moment for David Price to realize he's in the wrong here. That you cannot do battle with the media. You can't do battle with Hall of Famers like Dennis Eckersley, who happen to be making their living in the broadcast booth. You can't do that.
No,
stuff.
You can't. But baseball, again, is different. Yeah. It's more antiquated. They, I don't think there's as much interaction and as much control over players. Like, from managers and from GMs. Mm-hmm. Like, we had the conversation earlier in the week about when Jose Reyes was in his final days here in Toronto. A lot of people were suggesting, you got to get him off short. Like, he's got to play somewhere else. And the response was from, I believe, Anthopoulos or people within the organization was, we're not going to ask him to do that. He's Jose Reyes. He's a great player. He's getting paid a lot of money.
Yeah, he's a guy with pride.
Right. And I would assume the same thing would happen with Tulowitzki. No one's going to go up to Tulo and be like, dude, maybe we got to do something here, because he's not going to listen to you, or he's going to snap. And I would think if that applies to Reyes and Tulowitzki and others, believe me, David Price is in the same spot because of the contract hanging over the team. They're going to be really careful.
Yeah.
Because that threat can go the opposite way.
You're right.
I'm opting in all night, man, and guess who's got the most power? You want to buy me out? I don't even know if you can do that, but try. You know, like, you pay a guy upwards of $30 million a year, he's got some leverage over you.
That's scary stuff.
So how can John Farrell pull him aside and be like, I need you to go out there, walk the plank, say, it's all on me, I'm really sorry, I'm never doing it again. Farrell doesn't have the power to do that.
No, he doesn't. You're right.
Price will tell him to take a lap.
You'd have to be lobbying to David Price's agent or, you know, his closest advisors. And you'd have to be trying to point out to these people, you know, in a very delicate way, in a very pro-David Price way, that it's in David Price's best interests.
You got to go inception again, man. Like we were talking about Babcock.
Exactly.
Getting in Babcock's head to get Hyman off the Matthews line. You got to get into the guy's dreams to make it feel as if it was his idea.
You do.
Where's DiCaprio when you need him?
It's some kind of mind trick you have to pull. And you also got to say, hey, David, by the way, you're also, 5.54, your career postseason ERA. You're not a made man when it comes to primetime performance just yet.
They signed the contract, though.
They did.
They offered it to him anyway. He signed it. They gave it to him. Future headlines brought to you by 241 Pizza coming up. Colin Kaepernick still on the outside of the NFL looking in. A lot of buzz about that. And a big deal for Ryan Johansson down in Nashville. What kind of ripple effect will that have league-wide? We'll touch on it next. Overdrive continues on TSN2. Don't forget to set your PVRs. If you can't watch the show live, you can watch it later on TSN2. Find everything podcast and online, tsn1050.ca, and check us out on iTunes. Every hour of the show up on iTunes. So Ryan Johansson's got a new 8-year deal, $8 million per down in Nashville. I just saw up on SportsCenter. I guess he was talking about it recently. He's a full-blown mullet. Like, I feel like the mullet is making a comeback.
Oh, I don't know about that. Is it really? Where else are you seeing it? Like, I haven't noticed this trend.
I've seen a couple of mullets. Yeah. I've seen a few. It's scaring me.
Like, how extreme would you describe this mullet?
On Johansson, the one I just saw? Yeah. Assuming it's not a dated picture, a dated video, that's recently. Like, we're talking, you could spot this thing from a block away.
Wow.
Like, it was all business up top and a shaker in the back.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the hockey hair, I guess. You know, in hockey, you see guys wear them and...
But not lately. Like, I haven't seen... I mean, obviously not with the Leafs. You're not doing that on Lou's team.
Can you not wear... Is a mullet not allowed?
No.
Why not?
No mullets allowed.
Like, I know long hair, but is a mullet considered long hair? It's
long enough.
It's just longer than what's on top. That's the true definition of a mullet.
Too long for the Tal Luban, as they call them.
Mm-hmm.
The Tal Luban. Did you get that?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, okay.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good. That was coined in New Jersey by people who rolled their eyes at Lou Lamoriello's arbitrary rules of engagement around the Devils.
Well, and they have, for the most part, carried over here. But if Matthews pulls it off, what's he going to say? I mean, what's he really going to say to Matthews? And Matthews is such a stylish kid. He's on top of things. If he starts wearing a mullet, I'm telling you, it's back. It's not coming back. It's back.
Well, if anybody was to test Lou's rules, young Austin would be the man. And I do think, like, he's almost kind of testing them subtly, because you notice how he's got that really short on the sides, but like it's long on top, and if it kind of falls over his eyes, he starts looking like a rock star to some degree.
Yeah, there's
like
some
attitude. It's a Jack White look, you know, it's like out of the, you know, the White Stripes Jack White.
Very Jack White like.
It's very Jack White, especially if it gets messy. And so Lou wouldn't like that. Lou doesn't like Jack White hair.
No, he would.
Lou would not approve of Jack White hair.
There's no way he likes Jack White. He hates the White Stripes.
He must.
He hates Meg White.
Yes.
He would want her to shave her head.
That drumming's way too primitive for his liking.
Yeah.
Too sexual.
Yeah, Lou wouldn't be a fan. I just can't see it. But if Matthew starts wearing a mullet, man, it's back. Okay? So maybe not Johansson, but still, Johansson can do whatever he wants now. He's got 8 years of commitment from Nashville at $8 million per, and he's a really good player. He's a legit number one center. He's not like upper echelon Crosby, Malkin, McDavid, I don't even think Matthews level. He's a step below that, but he's a really good player. But 8 years at $8 million, I mean, that's a big commitment.
And just by the raw simple numbers, okay? The raw simple numbers, 61 points. Who else had 61 points this year, Hayes?
Marner and Nylander.
Marner and Nylander.
Both had 61.
If the going rate for a 20-something, early 20s forward who got 61 points last year is $8 million in 8 years, that's a lot of money.
Well, it comes down to leverage.
Yeah.
And Johansson, I guess, was approaching a position where he would have been a free agent. I believe he still would have been an RFA, but he's closer to UFA status. So they quote-unquote bought UFA years with this deal.
Yes.
Marner and Nylander are in a bit of a different situation because they're younger and it's earlier in their careers.
Yes.
But, and Johansson, bigger guy, more physical, plays a more important position. But you're right. I mean, if Marner and Nylander are equally as dynamic and equally as talented, if not more talented, than Johansson and put up the same amount of points in the year that Johansson just cashed in. Now, I'm sure the playoffs probably factored into the negotiation too, because Johansson was a beast early on before he got hurt. But if Marner and Nylander can do this off the hop, who's to say they can't improve on that? Like, what if they each put up 70 this year?
That's my point. You know how many points Ryan Johansson got as a rookie? 21.
Right.
So these guys are, Nylander and Mitch Marner are reeling off 61 in their first full years in this league.
Well, and the reason we don't even have to mention Matthews is because he's in a bigger and better category,
different category
altogether. Like Johansson, he's Matthews' better player, period, end of story. Today will be for the next 8 years.
Different category.
And he blew past those numbers in his first year. But, you know, Matthews, again, is going to be closer to McDavid. I expect he's going to get paid. I'd be shocked if it was under $11 million per year. I think it would be an unbelievable coup by the Maple Leafs if they got him for under $11 million, presuming he has another great year. But after that, that's where it really gets dicey and debatable. And I would say Leon Draisaitl is probably looking at this too and saying, wait a minute, he had like 78 points this past year and was equally as effective in the playoffs as Johansson, maybe even better.
Yeah.
And Johansson's getting 8 at 8, so what does that mean for Draisaitl? Is he looking at $9 million per? I mean, because that conversation was hot when McDavid got his contract, like, that's the next domino to fall, but it's kind of quieted down. That was almost a month ago. So yeah. Where does Draisaitl come in? Nylander, Marner? I mean, every big contract has an effect on whichever next one is coming up.
I mean, it's interesting. Like, just comparing to Marner, because Marner's, you know, I don't know why, but just look at this. And I know, Johansson's the center, and I know he's a bigger guy. I know he's more physical, but look at this. Like, even strength points. Okay, they both had 61 last year, all strengths.
Mm-hmm.
But Marner had 40 even strength points. This guy had 37. Like, he had 37 even strength points.
Mm-hmm.
And he got $8 million times 8 years.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Marner, the decisions that they're going to have to make between Marner and Nylander, albeit bringing the Matthews conversation into it, are fascinating and deep, because Marner, if Nylander plays with Matthews and puts up big numbers, Marner's response will be, I put up big numbers and I'm playing with Bozak.
Yeah.
Like,
as
with all due respect to Bozak, he ain't Matthews.
Yeah.
Like, Marner drives a line on his own.
Different.
And he put up 61 points.
Different scenario completely.
Yeah. So that's going to be fascinating. I think even, you know, ego's going to get in play. I don't know how the agents are going to factor all this out. I don't know how the Leafs are going to approach it, but I'd like to believe the Nylander and Marner camps are going to be smart enough to realize Matthews will end up getting paid more. But how much more, I don't know. How much more will they accept, I don't know. And when the two of them get in the room together, or at least they start talking deals together, that's where it really will get potentially dicey, like from the two camps. You know, let's say Nylander signs first and he gets 8 for 8. Just hypothetically speaking, he gets 8 for 8. Like, what if Marner comes in and says, well, it's got to be at least a dollar more than that?
Why wouldn't he? I can tell you this. Babcock said it himself this year. They all think they're the best guy. So Marner, by extension, thinks he's better than William Nylander. And I'm sure William Nylander thinks he can, you know, kick the crap out of Mitch Marner if he felt like it, you know, which he may be able to do because he is a more physical specimen. But we're not talking about in the alley. We're just, they all think they're better, okay? That's the good thing about these guys.
Right.
They all think they're better.
That's a positive.
Yeah, that's a I'm saying this as a positive, but it's not positive when you're negotiating contracts.
Mm-hmm.
You want those alpha guys that want to be the best on your team. You don't love them in the contract negotiation room.
All right, let's get to future headlines.
I think his dad will invariably settle down once his son is drafted and a team has the appropriate discussions with him.
Or...
Big Baller Brand in the house! Not only is he the face of the Big Baller Brand, but the face of the Lakers!
Or...
Josh Donaldson with a two-run home run here in the top of the first.
Or...
We'll get there. We'll get on a roll, you know. It's just maybe it's anything to shut you guys up, you know.
Overdrive. Future headlines.
All right, I got to touch on LeVar Ball in a moment, but future headlines on Overdrive is brought to you by 2-for-1 Pizza's new Chorizo Supreme Pizza. With chorizo, there's no way I'm pronouncing that properly. Jalapenos, I might as well butcher the whole thing. Jalapenos, mushrooms, tamatos, and onions. Order online, 2for1pizza.com, and tweet us at Overdrive1050 or text us 105050. The most outrageous future headline every Friday for your chance to win free pizza courtesy of our friends at 2-for-1 Pizza. That LeVar Ball clip, that was from Monday Night Raw, right? When he was out there first and then he introed Lonzo. I mean, I think the guy's a goofball, but I got to be honest, I'm kind of captivated by the whole scene. And I'm not alone. Like, did you see, he's in Vegas right now, I think, for some AAU
tournament.
And his youngest son, I think it is, LaMelo. Yeah. His plan, and they had like 800,000 people streaming.
And they had to turn people away from the gym. LeBron got turned away from the gym because they didn't think it was safe for LeBron to go in because mm-hmm. it was so crowded. And he would just bring more of a crowd and more hysteria to the whole situation.
All because of LeVar Ball and the Ball, Big Baller Brand. Everyone's
Big
into it.
Brand in the house!
Listen to that, man.
The guy's a marketing genius.
I got to give him credit.
I'm a sports dad. I know a lot of sports dads. Some are crazier than LeVar Ball. They just don't let the world know about it. This guy lets the world know how crazy he is while absolutely bringing more attention than his son, than any of his sons deserve. And by extension, driving up their value in enormously.
Has it been brought up? Maybe I'm bringing it up for the first time. I haven't seen anybody else talk about this. Whether or not LeVar Ball would want LeBron James to come to the Lakers? Because if LeBron's on the Lakers, Lonzo ain't the face. Like, how would that affect? Not that LeVar would make the call anyway. It's up to Magic and the Lakers and LeBron. But right now, it's Lonzo's team. Doesn't even matter who else is there. Like, it's Lonzo Ball. Everyone can't wait to see him play. He's going to be all over national TV. I'm really curious to see him play. But if LeBron comes, Lonzo becomes Kyrie real quick. And I can't imagine LeVar would be a fan of that.
Well, come on. Are we a little past this? I mean, I thought that argument went out with T-Mac and Vince, you know, leaving each other to form their own teams and then regretting it immensely in their older age.
Aren't we seeing it right now with Kyrie?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, I think he realizes LeBron's gone and he's not going with him, so get me out of here first.
But this idea that I need my team and I got to be the face of my team, I thought the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs and all their success kind of laid waste to that.
No.
Like, I got news for you. Phone up Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and ask them how badly they felt about playing with LeBron James. I don't think it was too bad.
No
Stay
doubt.
Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane. But that was also later in their careers.
Wasn't that late?
Wade had already won a title.
Yeah.
Like, Lonzo, I mean, trying to get into the head of LeVar Ball, you talk about the movie Inception. You need deep, deep drilling.
Well, as a marketing exercise, I mean, it's great for his kid. If LeBron gets the check mark from LeBron that this kid's okay, that's good for the Big Baller Brand.
Well, it should be. And Kyrie Irving has benefited greatly from that, too. He's a marketing stud himself.
Oh, he is.
Like, he
Uncle
sells
Drew.
A lot of shoes.
Uncle Drew.
Yeah, a lot of jerseys. He's affiliated with a lot of things. Anyway, future headlines. All right, the Jays coming off a sweep of the Athletics. The Jays keep the good times rolling with a sweep of the Angels over the weekend, or the Jays are who we thought they were as they follow up a sweep of the A's by dropping 2 of 3 to the Angels. What's your call, Dave?
I'm going with sweeping the Angels and keeping the dream alive because, as we know, Hayes, they've absolutely annihilated the AL West. They're 19-10 against the AL West, the junior varsity of the American League. So I can't see that stopping.
I've been saying all afternoon that they need to win the next 6 games to even have a 5% chance of going on a run. But I can't buy it yet. I can't. Like, I got to go with drops 2 or 3
okay.
because that's what bad clubs do. Scotty Mack and I were talking about this earlier in the week. You follow up a good stretch with a bad couple of losses, right when you start feeling good about yourself. I hope I'm wrong on that. If they get a sweep, I think they'll sweep Chicago. They should sweep the White Sox. They are brutal.
They're terrible.
And they want to lose. But you got to show me more than just 4 wins against Oakland. The Argos pick up their first win against a team out west this season as they roll into Saskatchewan and beat up on the Riders. Or Chris Jones gets his team on track with a big win over the Argonauts. What do you think of tomorrow night in Sasky?
I like the Argos on the road against the Green Riders, man, because there's something wrong in Saskatchewan. Like, Chris Jones has botched the drill out there, hasn't he? Like, how do you turn the most beloved team in the CFL into an afterthought yet again?
He talks way too much.
He does.
He talks way too much, which is difficult for a guy in my position to say, because generally coaches, and especially football coaches, take from the pages of Belichick and Milanovic and don't say anything, but he's so cocky, he's so sure of himself, which, again, I appreciate, but you can't follow that through with a brutal season a year ago. And now, what are they, 1-3?
1-3.
Yeah, they're not very good.
They're terrible.
He took the money, he runs the operation, he blew a bunch of people out.
And by the way...
And the Riders have been brutal.
And by the way, they got a new stadium. They're supposed to be the gold star franchise of this league, you know, with the team that the whole province loves and road trips to go see and sells more merchandise than all the rest of the teams put together. And they're in their second straight brutal season.
I'm on the Argos, too.
Same here.
David Olson, who was an Arena League football player, was signed by the Ravens late last night instead of Colin Kaepernick. So Kaepernick remains unemployed.
Youch.
Here's the final one, and this may be more of a long-term future headline. Colin Kaepernick begins the season unemployed as he watches teams kick off week one of the NFL season in early September. Or teams, or a team, finally gets desperate, decides Kaepernick should be the guy, and they sign him before camps close and the season opens. What do you think happens?
If I had to bet, Hayes, I'm going
to
go with Colin Kaepernick begins the season unemployed, blackballed from the NFL for his sideline kneeling during the national anthem a year ago.
I think he probably will too. I think he'll get back in. I think he will, because I think at some point, once the games start, the controversies generally come to an end. More focus on the actual games, the football. This time of year, it's still about the extracurricular stuff. It's about drama. It's about hot takes. It's about what are you bringing off the field. So it's still a bit of a toxic scene throughout the NFL surrounding Kaepernick. Listen, he decided to kneel down, but he didn't do anything illegal. Since then, he's followed it up almost perfectly. You know, he donates his time. He donates his money. He hasn't wavered off what he believes and what he was originally protesting.
Lost me on a couple things. And look, I support the guy, but... He lost me on the pigs, the policeman pig socks.
Okay.
He lost me on, oh yeah, I didn't vote in the election. He lost me on, I didn't vote in the election. I didn't quite get that one.
Right.
Pure political activist.
Yeah, but this was such a focused political activism. You know, like, I don't know how many people actually know what he was protesting against. Like, it wasn't the military.
No.
It was police and black people in the States.
Right.
You know, so... I think he lost some credibility with the I didn't vote whole routine. But that when you vote for someone, you're voting for, you know, a wide range of topics. This was such a specific topic.
I know, but you anoint yourself as a political activist.
But he didn't do that though. Like they didn't know he was doing it the first or 3 weeks. He didn't come out before the game and say, "Hey, make sure the camera's on me." Eventually, someone spotted it and was like, "Hey, what's going on here?" And then they went to him. So he didn't get out in front of it. He didn't say, "I want to be the poster boy." He's just kind of become the poster boy. But ultimately, I mean, let's be honest, it wasn't anything illegal.
No, I know.
And now I believe, teams are like, "I'm never bringing him on here because I'm not going to deal with the backlash."
You know what? Look, I support the guy. I'm way more in line with his politics than the politics of NFL owners, let's say. But I also see the point. Like, if I'm running a team, I like to think I can run a team and have the right to say, I don't need that crap on my team.
This is about
the team.
Exactly.
Not about you, Colin.
No, he's not entitled to a position, but you know, as many people pointed out, there's a lot of bad dudes in the NFL that keep getting jobs.
Right.
And they're not entitled to them either, but they keep getting them.
But my point is, if you're really hard line about just how your team runs, if you got to lose rules about how your team runs in the NFL, you know, you just, as long as the guy shows up, runs the plays, and doesn't distract from the team concept, I'm okay with the
guy. But by all accounts, that's what he's done.
Like Except for the fact he distracted from your season by
turning it into
the biggest story of the season.
Right, but if you listen to a lot of his teammates, people in San Fran, they said he still showed up and worked hard every day. Yeah. It didn't have an effect. It wasn't like, you know, in between the halves he was having speeches or giving speeches out about this kind of stuff.
And well, what a shock. A bunch of rich guys are executing a petty vendetta.
Well, no kidding.
Because they can.
Listen, I don't think the Ravens deserve to take heat for signing this Olsen guy because, like I've been saying throughout the day, I think they'll cut him in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Flacco's their guy. Ryan Mallett's the backup, which you can agree or disagree to, but that's not the point. Mallett was the guy 2 days ago, and he still is today. They brought this guy in to be a plug and take some snaps and then leave in two weeks. But Kaepernick wasn't going to do that.
But plug is the word, right? Like, -1 yards
in
career
college
total total passing.
Right. He's going to come in and throw to third stringers, get hit by guys, and leave.
Yeah.
Like, and then get cut. So they weren't going to do that with Kaepernick anyway.
Fair enough.
We'll get to our best bets tee up, which should be a fun weekend. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. All right, time now for our best bets, brought to you by ProLine. Two gas cans on the mound at Yankee Stadium tonight. So I'll take Tampa in the over. Tanaka's been a big disappointment for New York. And I'm on Houston at Detroit tonight. Throw down 20 and you can score 110. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. You tracking the Canadian Open this weekend?
Yeah, I'm going to be down there. I always look forward to it, Hayes. It's one of my favorite events of the year.
Some Canadian content. Graham Dillette had himself a great day.
He's playing well.
But Dustin Johnson is lurking. And that is the one guy who, if I'm paying for a ticket and I'm walking around that course, that's got to be the guy. And the guy you hope is in contention. I would expect he would be over the weekend.
He always plays well out here. He's talked about how the back injury he suffered at the Masters when he fell down that little staircase with his stocking feet on hardwood floor. Bad move.
Mm-hmm.
Bad move. The stocking feet on the hardwood floor. He says that's still kind of hampering him a little bit. But you wouldn't know when you watch him hit a ball, man. That guy is a human rocket launcher.
He's a machine.
He's
the Aaron Judge of golf.
Like, I talked earlier about how it's fun to watch Bubba Watson hit a golf ball with a driver. Dustin Johnson's just as much fun to see, man. Like, he is a powerhouse to behold.
He's money. All right, buddy. I'm out of here for a couple of weeks. Scotty Mack will be in the big chair, but I think you're going to be kicking around a bit.
I'm looking forward to it, but not that you're going away. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
On your 2 week vacation. And I hope you don't get bored, man. Like, find something exciting to do in your life.
I'll get a hobby.
Really?
I'll create something.
Is that right?
No, probably not. Netflix and chill for 2 weeks.
That's a good hobby.
All right, Dave. You're in here Monday with Scotty Mack.
Looking forward to it.
There's Dave Feschuk from The Star. I'm out of here for a couple of weeks. I'll be back in a couple of weeks. We'll chat then.